after such a long durational performance, would you feel a sort of catharsis? Is that what happens?
No, I don't think so. I don't think, you know, there's relief of having done the piece and that it went okay. But I don't think it's cathartic. Or that's not why I do it. You know, there's not something that I want to release.
What's the reason behind the duration then?
Last year when I made this piece for the first time, that was the length of time that was imposed by the gallery and the commissioning curatorial rationale. To do something for 4 hours every day for 17 days. And I found that that was a really nice amount of time to work in. I really enjoyed 4 hours. So when the opportunity came to remake the piece here in a different city, different context, different staircase, you know, I had to sort of guess at a good time. And I thought, well, why not make it 4 hours again? I mean, in theory, it could be 6 hours or 8 hours or 2 hours, but actually the 4 hours seem to really work with that particular staircase. I don't know. And it's long enough to go through different, to almost have cycles of, you know, feeling strong, feeling fit, feeling tired, then your energy comes up again and things shift. It also gives an audience enough time to almost like be tidal. You know, people can go away, they can come back again.
But not just this work, most of your work has been connected to either duration, some long length of performing, of gathering, some sort of physical strain, in a sense.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering actually, which is quite the obvious thing with live art, the bodily pain, when connected especially in this piece to women falling down the stairs, it could be read for me as a solidarity, but I think it's not so much about that, is it?
Well, it's interesting because I didn't realize that this idea of falling down the stairs is a euphemism for violence against women. Someone told me that was a campaign about violence against women, and there's this, you know, thing you say if you've been beaten up or something, that, oh, I fell down the stairs, you know. It's always hard to say what a piece is about, because the piece is about whatever the person watching it thinks it's about to some extent, you know. There's, of course, the artist has an intention, but ultimately it's that sense of bringing something into a space and someone else bringing something into a space, i.e. the person watching. I don't really like to put a sort of fixed idea of what the piece is, because it's got to allow other people and other sensibilities, you know. So for me, in some ways, this piece is very formal. It's about architectures, bodily architectures, and when you start unpicking the ideas behind that, that in itself is pretty loaded, you know. That Baroque architecture that this staircase is, with its extensive organization of form and organic meeting non-organic, is a very intriguing sort of proposition that really appeals to me. And the sense of, in one form, it's just trying to do something that's terribly, terribly simple. And the idea of a body, you know, having an architecture, it has a set of bones, it has a muscular system that's trying to organize itself to a sort of dominant structure, you know. So there's a play between those things. But certainly other people have talked about this piece in terms of Duchamp's nude descending, or the Cramps, naked girl falling down the stairs, you know. So there's, do you know what I mean? There's lots and lots of really nice, pleasurable, playful approaches to that, I think. And another part of it is also catching people's eye. Sometimes there's a possibility to catch people's eye, and that sort of moment of connection and intimacy.
It's certainly very aesthetic. I want to maybe talk a little bit more about this relation to the architecture, where in this case you have found yourself in Baroque setting.
Yeah.
And Baroque setting in itself has, for once, we are not able to understand what that time was about, because we are full of prejudice of what it was. In any sense, it was a certain set of rules by which the whole society had abided, and it had manifested itself in the aesthetics. So how do you think your aesthetics, which is your performance, is very beautiful, and you obviously do strive to maybe strike a pose, or just do something very sculpture with your body. How does that bodily presence of yours speak in social political terms? But I'm not just implying that, you know, falling down the stairs as a corporeality itself.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the piece might be beautiful, but that's not my preoccupation to create something beautiful. It's hard to say because for me it's a piece that's always in movement. So if there is a pose, I'm not thinking about making poses. You know, I'm thinking about trying to find circular movements for 4 hours on a staircase. And a lot of the movements feel very much ungainly. My face goes purple. I get cuts, like the carpet was absolutely hideous, so I now have horrible, really bad carpet burns. They're raw, they're red, there are cuts from the edge of the carpet. So we could talk about those things as beautiful, but the general perception is normally of those things being quite harsh and quite, you know, so I kind of like the play and the movement between how we read a body in motion, you know, that it can sort of play between something that is for a moment considered beautiful according to a set of ideas, but then equally something that's considered grotesque or difficult, you know, like I'm naked, I've had extensive waxing done, so the genitals are very much exposed, my asshole is really exposed, my cunt's really exposed, so there's a real sense of revealing, you know, it's almost a pornographic revealing, but it's not working within that economy at all, but it's acknowledging that economy most absolutely just by being female and being so shaved, so waxed, so exposed. So I'm kind of answering your question in a roundabout way, but I'm trying to sort of talk about, it's not my job to theorize the work, but it is my job to try and sort of, you know, give you some of my thoughts about how I've approached it. And also my body is very scarred from many other performances, so in particular at the moment there are two very bright purple slashes on the backs of the legs. So, and there's a sort of cascade of tiny scars, skin that's wrinkling, I'm in my 40s now, so the skin behaves differently from in my 20s. And I find it, you know, fat, gravity, I find this play of sort of body, its material, its mass, balance, and allowing that to sort of, you know, when a bum is one way round and it might look beautiful and then you go upside down and it sits in a really weird way and then you move against a piece of stone. It's really hard for me to tell, but I don't think I'm showing a naked female body in a way that just allows purely objectifying and eroticizing, you know. And I think that's where, I think it's not, you know, in the UK certainly we have an overtly, it's like our media is almost sort of hyperactive, deranged teenager in terms of its kind of masturbatory approach to the female body. Show almost everything but not quite everything, and it's a sort of exhausting dynamic, and I think maybe I'm doing something that's not that. Lots of space for lots of readings. So last time I did this piece it was in a Victorian, on a Victorian staircase that was very much to do with precision engineering, exactly what you're saying from the Baroque statement, that particular Victorian staircase was embodying, it was embodied ideas, you know, about precision engineering, about architecture. The whole history of the staircase was wrapped up with industry, power, wealth, British imperialism, you know. So I don't think an audience has to know that, but I like that sense of deep time, and that's a body, it's a certain kind of embodiment in the architecture, and that I have another kind of embodiment, but also the people come and see the work are another kind of...
When you mentioned the scars that you carry from the previous performances, what comes to my mind is a paragraph from Elizabeth Gross, who had written that because our bodies are intact and are supposed to be polished, we're basically living in a genital-centric society where the only hole, the only penetration in the body is actually the genitals. Well, as she had observed from an anthropological point of view, that in some African tribes, when they punctuate all their body, very similar to what you have done last time in Ljubljana that we were here, you make your body perceptive, like the whole of your body becomes an erogenous zone, which means that it's not only focused on one level of sexuality of the body, and that's what I think that it has proven, especially with the two more obvious cuts at the back of your
calf muscles. Yes,
especially there, it had shown that your gaze of the viewer could not be pulled away from those.
Yeah.
Which performance do these two cuts come from?
The two cuts happen in a dance piece called Untitled Syncope. And it's actually a short piece, it's not a durational piece, it's about 40 minutes long, and it's quite structured. Well, no, it's very structured, it's actually choreographed, and the cuts happen quite early on in the piece. However, the cuts that are looking particularly fresh at the moment are from an adapted version of that piece, where I performed in a queer club in London called Ducky, and they had a night called Performance and Cocktails, and artists were asked to make pieces that were just 8 minutes long, which was a huge challenge for me. I thought, you know, if I'm working in such a tiny amount of time, I want it to still have the kind of unfurling and dismantling that a longer piece can have. So I decided to do these cuts. But I think it's really curious how one piece can be read through another piece. You know, there's this history there, and of course they do. I was really aware that this time when I was coming down the stairs, as soon as someone saw my leg for the first time, or both legs, they would see this marking. This is marking my body as something other, you know, similar to what you're saying about the Elizabeth Gross writing. What it's doing is resisting one reading. In a way, you know, very similarly to maybe how people like J.G. Ballard might write about the body as well, in much more, decentralized in a way, you know. I think that's very interesting. When you were describing what she was saying, I was thinking about the more pervasive sense of sexuality or taste of eroticism, and I suppose I've been over the years kind of slowly absorbing writers like J.G. Ballard and Georges Bataille, Burroughs as well, you know.
Finding yourself in the artistic system from the point of view of a live art performer, you are very well accepted in certain quite institutional structures. You get invited to festivals, you do have a certain world acclaim of being such an artist. Maybe it's a bit too pragmatic to ask, but for you as a woman, how do you sensitivize this, you know, relation towards you being accepted, towards whether your gender plays a certain role in that, is it considered from the positions in power, if, you know, we can abstract something like that? Or is it more based on your personal connections, you know, a certain level of art world, which is certainly quite comfortable? You feel comfortable in this?
No, never entirely comfortable. Performance is still a marginalized practice. Even when I might move in circles where it's very accepted, in the bigger scheme of looking at the visual arts, performance art, or if you want to call it live art, is still tiny and marginal and under-curated by institutions. Academia is different. Academic institutions is different because there's performance studies, there's visual studies, there's a much bigger, there's people who've been writing about performance for a long time who are very established. And so I see my position as a kind of like an interloper. You know, I have a real problem with institutions as well. I love them and I am suspicious of them. So I've decided to see myself as an interloper, or someone who can pass across lots of different contexts. Because I think to survive as an artist, a male, female, you know, any kind of artist, any gendered artist, it's tough. It's just really bloody tough. You know, artists love talking about other artists' work, so that sort of helps get more work. And then every now and then there's a really wonderful curator who I get to work with who also helps, but consistently to get work. It's just been living just about getting by, you know. So I'm very lucky to have done that much, because a lot of people don't get to do that much, quite frankly. And I have some champions, some people who are very wonderful about inviting me to give lectures, blah, blah, blah. So the dance between the artist and the institution is one that I'm about to investigate for 3 years. I've just been given a research fellowship at Queen Mary's University of London in the Department of Drama, interestingly enough, even though my background isn't drama. But that department has a very eclectic and dynamic faculty, you know, members who are really varied, and it particularly seems to, as well as having very traditional approaches to drama, it also has people like Lois Weaver, who's been working with, I guess, a kind of queer theatre for a number of years, and she's been working very much in London with cultivating much younger emerging artists as well as students. Dominic Johnson, who's a performance artist, but also a scholar, an academic. People like Ron Athey as well. But I'm sort of at a loss to say how much that's to do with gender. And I definitely want to maintain a kind of suspicion of institutions, partly because I kind of think that sometimes practice, art practice, has to stay outside of prescribed spaces. There needs to be space. I mean, this is also what's been very interesting about working in Ljubljana.
A lot of times it would happen, especially with new media and live art. Mm. If we come back to the context of this performance, it was performed in Grubareva Palace, which is an archive, actually, a Slovenian archive. So talking about also the living situation, what is your attitude towards the archive or towards documentation of your work?
That's great. I actually wish that I knew more about the building that I performed in today, because that's really interesting that it's an archive space. I have a whole load of cardboard boxes at the moment that contain different media, different formats. Part of me collects it because I feel I should. Another part of me collects it because someone else might find it useful. Part of me thinks it's a pain in the neck every time I move, but also I get very interested in the relationship to the photographers or the video makers. I think there's a danger of over-archiving, you know? I think sometimes some things should be thrown out. People get excited, which is great, and inspired, but then it seems to get a little carried away. So I like the idea that we can still forget. I like a bit of decay.
And falling.
Falling, yeah, and just that things can pass.